Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Bachelor News Radio Show on the Bachelor News Radio Network. I'm L.A. Bachelor. We thank you for joining us here. A little under the weather, so we'll get through it. But I want to bring in my first guest. It's always a pleasure to have him on. I consider him a dear friend and a brother. He has his own show. It's The Mighty Oba with Pat Freeman. And, of course, he is the he covers the Buffalo Bills and the NFL. He is Pat Freeman. Pat, always good to have you on, my brother.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to be on the award-winning Bachelor Pad. Thank you for having me on today.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I want to start with the Bills and start on their offensive side of the ball. Of course, they played Arizona week one, their season, both season openers in Buffalo. And, you know, one of the things I thought would happen with this team, especially offensively, even though Brady's done well in terms of getting them to run the ball more and try to have more of a balance. You lose your top two receivers at a point where you have a coach that allows the quarterback just to be free willy, in my opinion, throwing in the triple coverage, double coverage, trying to do too much, turning the ball over. And now you lose your two wide receivers, 18 of 23, 232 yards and two touchdowns. Assess Josh Allen's performance, both in making the smart decisions in the passing game and not being stubborn and, you know, checking down instead of checking and trying to go deep, checking down and taking the run.
Yeah, he had a, you know, that first game of the season, most NFL coaches will tell you they don't have book on the opponent. So you've got to really read your keys. And Josh, he had some first game mistakes. He held the ball too long on that strip fumble. That was a situation where he really should have ran. You know, he had a clear alley there, but he did not. And the ball got stripped. But he had an average. I mean, his numbers sound, you know, they were okay, you know, but it was not a great outing, especially on the defensive side of the ball for the Bills. I thought that the Bills struggled to stop Arizona in the first quarter and a half. They had to make some adjustments, and that usually happens in the first few games because they don't have a large book on the opponent.
Right.
And Arizona had a very good game plan the first quarter and a half. Other than that, they never really stopped the Bills. The Bills kind of stopped themselves. And it was a kind of helter-skelter offensive plan because, remember, the Bills got two top-tier tight ends.
Right.
They're paying Dawson Knox top money, and you picked Dalton Kincaid at the top of the draft a couple of years ago. So they run a lot of 12 personnel, and they really did not efficiently use either one of them. And it was a mediocre day for Josh Allen. And other than that strip fumble, he had a pretty average day. I think being at home kind of helped him out. But that was a game that could have went either way. And that's usually the case the first couple of games of the season. And then you got to think, you know, in the back of their minds, you know, they won't say it publicly, but you got to turn right back around and go to Miami
right, for
the divisional game Thursday. So I think just getting out with the win is a plus for them because I don't expect them to win Thursday because of the physical demands of such a game against a divisional opponent. I think advantage goes to the Dolphins. But this first win, just to get it, I thought it was very important for the beginning of the season.
Talking with Pat Freeman here on the Bachelor News Show. Pat, just to stay in that area offensively, what do you think? I know it's early, like you said, but what do you think of the play calling? And did a lot of the struggles on offense, because they didn't score until late in the second quarter, a lot of struggles on offense have to do with the lack of pass rush on defense, the lack of getting off the field on defense, or a little bit of both?
It was a little bit of everything. Those first couple of games for an NFL team are a little bit different. But I don't think the Bills played a very good game. I think they played well enough to win. I think Arizona had a bizarre game plan after a quarter and a half. And you tell me, you take Marvin Harrison Jr. fourth overall, and you only target him three times. He dropped one pass, and then they came right back to him, which is good. But then you don't barely use him the rest of the game. It didn't make much sense. And then I thought Arizona did more to beat themselves than the Bills beat them.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I was going, too. They had a chance. And you know what, too, Pat? I was concerned about this game, not just because, of course, it's week one, anything can happen, but to lose your top two wide receivers in a way, like I said, the coach seems to allow Josh Allen to do whatever he wants to do, sort of like Roethlisberger did in Tomlin. But if you know he'll go off the rail and do his own thing at some point, and he can get injured, he can throw a pick, strip fumble, whatever, then why not make sure that you get a bona fide one in there somehow? If you lose Diggs, you lose their second best receiver there. If you lose
Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis.
Yeah, Gabe Davis. And then why not try to bring somebody in? I mean, you got like two of the best tight ends, you know, blocking and receiving in the league. I get that. But I don't think you can tight end your way down the field every single drive and get your way to the Super Bowl through all your tight ends. And, right. And I also thought they didn't use James Cook that well. And I question Brady when he should use him. He doesn't always seem to do that.
Right. I agree with you 150%. I thought Brady's play calling was a bit of a factor, too. And he really has never gotten James Cook. James Cook is a heck of a man in space.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get him in space as many times as I can, similar to the way Thurman Thomas and Marshall Faulk, those types of running backs, that were able to do that throughout their careers. I see the same thing for James Cook. He's a very good runner, but getting him in space, he did bring in Davis for a little while. That was a good change up.
Yeah.
He's a new running back for the Bills, but I was not a fan of Brady's play calling on yesterday. And also, the Bills made a lot of mistakes, L.A., that I think sometimes you can attribute it a lot to the way the league is situated now, that you don't have the four preseason games. You're basically protecting your players until the season starts. So it's almost like the first few games are like preseason games almost.
Right.
But from what I saw, the Bills have some concerns on the back end. As you know, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde are no longer with the team.
Right.
Those guys were all pro safeties. I don't know if that's happened in the NFL in a long time, but these guys both had all pro status for almost 7 years consistently. And losing the two of them, I think, is going to be a very difficult to replace as this season goes on.
Especially when you can't get a pass rush.
Right.
If your back end is not right, if you got a pass rush, you can hide them for a while, you know. But if you lose, like you said, two, not one, but both your all-pro safeties, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. And you lost Tre'Davious White. I mean, he's coming off another injury. You replaced him with Rasul Douglas, and you've got Christian Benford on the other side. But also remember, too, Matt Milano tore his bicep at, towards the end of training camp, and he's out again. And your linebackers, man, I mean, they're fast, but they're not big, L.A. I mean, these guys are 220, 225.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how far this team goes. They made a lot of first-game mistakes, a lot of penalties. Osiris Torrence had a rough outing. I thought Spencer Brown and Dawson Knox on the offensive line played well. I thought Connor McGovern has settled in at center okay. But other than that, I thought the play calling, Brady, to me, did not get a good, what you call rhythm of the offense, even though Arizona did nothing to stop the Bills. The Bills did more to stop themselves.
Right.
I mean, honestly, Arizona, after they had a good offensive game plan coming out, and then after the Bills, McDermott told us in postgame, they made some in-game adjustments, which you expect in every game, but it's especially more important in those first couple of games because you don't have book on your opponent. Right. I thought after the Bills made their adjustments, man, Gannett, I'm like, what are you doing? You know, there were receivers wide open that the Bills on the backside missed. Marvin Harrison was wide open on that last play.
Right.
And, you know, I thought Arizona, to me, it was a game that Arizona did more to lose the game than the Bills did to beat them.
Let's talk about some of those concerns. We're talking with Pat Freeman, host of the Mighty Oba, and, of course, covers the Bills in the NFL on the Bachelor News show. Talk about those concerns. You look at this division, and at the time of this broadcast, the Jets will be, excuse me, the last team in that division to play at San Fran to play the 49ers. But you look at this division overall, I got to tell you, Pat, I think it's a three-team race. And even that now with the way New England came out defensively, I know, you know, Cincinnati still got their issues. But all of a sudden now, if anybody says the Bills are the odds-on favorite to win hands down like they have been, I think I can sell the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right. I don't disagree with that. I think this could be, depth-wise, could be the weakest McDermott team in the last few years. I thought last year's team should have done better. And, of course, the 2 years before, I thought were their best, you know, best teams. But he lost a lot of veteran players. You know, some of them from injury, some of them it was time to let them go. And like you said, the ceiling might have – they're more or less a veteran team still. They've got a franchise quarterback. They've got a lot of youth in place, but they do have a lot of vets in place. And this team could be I don't know how far it's going to go. I would say it's early in the season. But what I saw yesterday, I was not that impressed. And if Josh keeps taking chances like that in the NFL, sooner or later he's going to get seriously hurt. You know he hurt his wrist now.
Yeah, and I thought that was a bad move when he tried to jump like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that goes back to, again, he's trying to be Superman. Use the tools you have around you. Assuming your defense, you certainly got good running backs and an offensive line. Use what you have. Is it about your stats, being Superman, or getting the W's? That's my question.
Yeah, I think, you know, you could see McDermott went right over to him, and he keeps telling him, you know, I mean, dude, you got Mitchell Trubisky as the backup. You know, I know you're a Pittsburgh fan, and
oh, God, we couldn't wait for him to go.
you know what Mitchell is going to give you, you know?
Right.
And Mitchell Trubisky is your backup. This is his second stint in Buffalo. You're not going to get very much out of Mitchell. And if you lose Josh Allen, You got a serious problem. Josh needs to take care of himself. He's got the wrist injury. You also lost Teron Johnson yesterday with a forearm injury, and he's not playing Thursday. So you've got some problems. And this is one of the highest paid nickelbacks in the NFL.
Right.
And he's out, and he's a key cog in that defense. And I think the Bills have more problems than, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's early. You know, you've been doing this long. You know that those early games, we're going to see as it goes. But from what we saw yesterday, the Bills have a lot of improvements to make to defend the AFCs.
Yeah, especially this is like a quasi extra preseason game, and people look at it since they cut back and they want to cut even more. But just quickly, let's go through the other teams in the division. Let's start with Miami. First, your thoughts on that bizarre situation with Tyreek Hill. You know it. You talked about Buffalo being a very racist area. So you know Florida certainly has a reputation down there for shoot 'em up movies and that kind of thing. But and the cops. But according to what he said and what all the reports are, okay, he was speeding or doing something like reckless driving. They pull him out of the car, cuff him. I can see him mouthing off. I can see him turn his head, whether he's saying I'm Tyreek Hill or whatever. And then they slam him down. And then Calais Campbell, who you know well, he comes right over to try to help. And they cuff him. What's your thoughts on how that went down? And for him to show the mental toughness, put it aside and get five for $130 and a touchdown.
It's bizarre. No matter what the cop's disposition is, as you well know, you can't tell me you didn't know. You're there. It's right near the stadium.
Right.
Where you're coming in. You know players are coming in. You know he's a player. I don't care what he's done. You know he's got to play a game. Unless he's done something that's just absolutely bizarre that you can't turn your head on, you give him the courtesy. And before a game, man, you played the game. You're an athlete. You know how you are before a game. You got butterflies and everything else going. I didn't understand anything those officers did. And I do believe he will be fired before the week is out. He has no business on anyone's police force, yet alone the sheriff's department. And you're over by the stadium. You know where the players come in. And things happen all the time. But unless he did something that hurt someone or he was threatening someone, there was no reason to be that. It was just bizarre. And I can see why Drew Rosenhaus and I think Attorney Crump is looking into it all.
Oh, he got Crump in it. Oh, boy.
So I think you're going to see more come out of this. The sheriff is Broward County Sheriff's Department, I think, will move to fire this guy quickly and try to do the punches pilot, wash their hands of him as best they can. But what I saw yesterday was absolutely unnecessary. And I didn't see anything Tyreek Hill did that mandated that type of action. And, you know, being a retired law enforcement person myself, I've been called every name under the book.
Yeah.
Never got in that situation. And that's just something that you have to deal with. And knocking on his window, get out the car. Why did he have to get out the car? Why?
Yeah.
For no reason. I mean, you got it. The thing about it, L.A., you got his license plate. You got his registration information. Did you have to do all of that right then and there?
And pull him out of the car.
Right.
And knowing if he, you know, he might have just said, write me a ticket or whatever. You know, these guys with these guns, they get their egos even stronger, and they got the badge. And so I don't know what was said. The interesting thing about it is, I've been to that stadium. You've been to that stadium. Yeah. I mean, there's pictures of all the players all over the place, on the jumbotrons and all around. And if it's just a speeding ticket or he was speeding, he didn't harm anybody. Like you said, he didn't harm himself. Write him the ticket. He got to get to do his job.
Right.
That's what it came down to.
You could have sent him the ticket in the mail.
Right.
You have all of his legal information. Unless he did something that mandated immediate action, your actions to me showed me you have no business being on anyone's police department.
Do we know if it was
more law enforcement officer?
I think that one officer was put on administrative leave. Is it more than one? I haven't followed it today.
Apparently, it was the one officer that initiated the stop. The other officers were backup officers. So
okay.
That's normal procedure. You back up the lead guy. It's the lead guy that basically is mandating everything going on. I'm just there as a backup. But,
right.
You know, to pull him out the car, you're talking about 85, 90 degrees. That concrete had to be 100 and something.
I know, and it was humiliating because it didn't look like it was sidewalk. He looked like he was in the street. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, some of these officers, they have no business on these departments. I did a panel discussion a few months ago up here, and I said one of the things that I've learned being a retiree of law enforcement, that they need to come up with some way to measure how a person reacts when that adrenaline rush comes. Because you see what an officer is made of when they're under duress. And until they can measure that or figure out how they can measure that and see how a person reacts, you're going to keep seeing these instances happen, and some of them, especially when it's a person of color, it ends up in an unnecessary death of or that person being injured. And that's the part that bothers me the most. How come it's always a person of color that ends up either being injured, unnecessarily arrested, or dies?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, that's a great point, but some of these officers forget being an officer. They don't need guns.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you're that afraid, you shouldn't be a police officer.
Absolutely.
I understand the backup thing, what you're saying, but it looked like 7 or 8 cops on the scene.
Right.
You know, that seemed like a little overkill, but I digress. On the field, Tua gets his money. Looks like Tyreek is going to be full-fledged. They still got all those speedsters. They lost a lot, I think, on defense. Where do you see the Dolphins finishing in this division?
Either first or second. First or second. And I think really this division is, to me, even with the losses the Bills have, I think it's going to be between Miami and the Bills. And honestly, last year, L.A., Miami gave away the division. They were in control of the division. And the Bills basically had to win their last games after the 6th or 7th game. The Bills had to basically win out, and they did.
Right.
And that's how the Dolphins lost the division. They basically gave it back to the Bills. I don't think the Bills necessarily won the division last year, but other than the Dolphins just basically – gave it to them, but they were in control of the division. They were up by 2 games, and they still lost the division. So Miami needs to be able to finish. I think Vince Fangio hurt them on defense. He never meshed with that group, and that was a bad hire. You know, I don't know how he's going to do in Philly, but he didn't do well with the Dolphins. And the Dolphins, to me, when you've got that kind of speed, man, you can't teach speed. You've got Waddle. You've got Tariq Hill. That's just crazy. How do you stop that?
Is McDaniel's the right guy to get them over the hump and Tua?
I think so. I think he, I don't know if Tua, you know, because Tua, those concussions and the injuries, I don't know if he can do it. But I was surprised they let Mike White come, you know, they released Mike White and he signed with the Bills.
Right.
I thought Mike White is a serviceable backup. So that's who the Bills, he doesn't know the offense yet. So you're
right.
Still sporting Trubisky out there. But I was surprised the Dolphins let Mike White go. I liked Mike White when he was with the Jets, and I thought he's definitely a serviceable quarterback at the NFL level.
Speaking of the Jets, we're talking with, of course, Pat Freeman on the Bachelor News radio show. Speaking of the Jets, again, I mean this wholeheartedly. I don't wish any physical ill will on anybody, certainly not Aaron Rodgers. But I hope he falls flat on his face, because the Jets keep thinking they keep. We've seen this movie.
Yeah,
and he's coming off. He could look like Kirk Cousins coming off an injury like that. I mean, it takes time. It takes rhythm. It takes reps. And they're facing a pretty. I know the 49ers lost some people on defense and things. That's still a very good.
Still a very good team.
All those guys.
Still a very good team.
So what about this game as we talk about it? Well, let's just say in general, what about the Jets? What do you see them fitting?
The Jets have a very good defense. We know that.
Right.
You know, their coach is a very good defense coordinator. He's very familiar with San Francisco 49ers. That's one thing you can say in the Jets' preparation tonight, even though it's the first couple of games of the season. This is a guy – who was the defense coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers and coached in a Super Bowl and is capable of, you know, winning against that team. So the first couple of games, I always give it a crapshoot. But like you said, with Aaron Rodgers, I just don't know what are you going to get out of a guy that's been taken away from the game that long. What people don't realize at the pro level, as you well know, L.A., is that these guys are peaking at repetitions, peaking at practice, peaking physically. Then if they get injured, the older they are, the harder it is for them to regain that level of competitive athletic ability. And that's what you see with older players when they get injured. So we don't know what we're going to get with Aaron Rodgers. Is he a Hall of Fame quarterback? No question about that. But at 39, will he be able to come back? We saw the same story with Brett Favre. He was unable to do it in New York. He went to Minnesota, almost got them over the hump in the playoffs, but still was not good enough to do it. And older players have older problems. You know, it's just that vicious of a league physically, and it takes its toll on your body. And we don't know what Aaron Rodgers we're going to get tonight. One thing we do know is that Saleh is going to put a defense out there that's going to be competitive. And he's done that since he's been there. But offensively, that team has been helter-skelter and has not been able to perform for an entire season.
Right. So you think you're looking at them as the third team in the division then, basically?
I don't know. I mean, you with Jared Mayo in with the Patriots, I think he can catch some people off guard for a few games, and then you're going to figure out what he's trying to do. We're just going to have to keep our eyes on those two. But I think this division begins and ends with the Dolphins and the Bills. And I think the Dolphins will win Thursday. I do believe that, because I am not a fan of Thursday night games. Every NFL player I've interviewed, they give you the company line. Well, we got to do it. They can't. You know they can't stand it. And
right.
Their bodies aren't right until maybe Thursday. And to get them out there and play another game against now a divisional opponent, I give advantage to the Dolphins because they're playing at home.
And I always think, I tell people all the time, Don't be surprised early when it's a divisional opponent that the underdog wins. They play right. each other twice a year. They know each other's schemes and habits and things. So, you know, I believe it can go either way. And speaking of New England finally in that division, I can see that one coming because he will put a good defense on the field. You know, Cincinnati's quarterback still not right. You could tell. They got offensive line issues still. The whole Chase situation and the Boyd situation and all that stuff in the offseason. And I'm not sold on Zach Taylor going for it on fourth down on your own 35 and stuff like that. So, you know, what about this Patriot team?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they are. I think they might be competitive, but I don't think they're ready for the Dolphins or the Bills. Now, how they play the Jets, we'll see. But like you said, in the division, it's a different animal. He might be able to catch them off guard a little bit, but we're going to have to wait and see on the Patriots. I'll give them a pass for a little while. Give me a few games on the Patriots, and I'll get back to you on that one. Because, you know, they won, you know, against a Cincinnati team that, you know, I think Mike Brown has done everything in his power to make that a mediocre franchise. Mm-hmm. He's had the talent over the years, even under Marvin Lewis. They had crazy talent. Half of them were in the in prison, but they always had talent in Cincinnati, and Mike Brown is a very cheap guy. He doesn't want to pay top players. It's ridiculous. You paid the quarterback, you better pay the receiver. You can't take those kind of players at that level and they not be financially rewarded. So. Right. You know, I still think this division is talent-wise is the Dolphins and the Bills. Yeah. And until proven otherwise, it's still pretty early. The Patriots could be the surprise of the league. You never know. I mean, it's just pretty early to make that determination. And then, you know what? The one thing, too, is, you know, L.A., the biggest thing in the NFL is health. I mean, we can start seeing people drop off the map and – you don't even know these. I have to carry a card because of so many people are on these rosters and the changeover. You're cutting one person this week. You're bringing somebody in. Health is the biggest determination in the NFL at this, you know, current time.
But I'm just as a little note and some irony in it. It's not in all cases, but doesn't it seem like in most cases when some of these new quarterback, so-called franchise quarterback, gets drafted and they get to sit. The one who's starting is a brother, and he's taking all the licks.
Yeah.
Until the rookie white dude gets in there.
Right.
And Jacoby Brissett is no different.
No. And Jacoby Brissett is a quality player.
He really is.
He's done good work in this league and is deserved. I thought Cleveland should have given him an opportunity before they gave a house to Deshaun Watson. You know, I didn't know, and then I thought when he went to the Commanders that they were at least going to give him a decent opportunity, but that didn't seem to be the case. But I've always been a fan of Brissett, and I'm just hoping, you know, this might be an opportunity for him you know, to lay the groundwork, you know, to really make a note, you know, a noteworthy stance of his career, because he's a quality, he's a big guy too. And, he's a decent player. I'm kind of pulling for him.
Maybe like Geno in Seattle, his career has been rejuvenated, you know, and he deserves to get one last shot. I know he's a starter now, Brissett, but, you know, of course he's warming up to keep his feet warm until this kid comes in.
Right.
Surprises, disappointments from week one. Maybe not so many disappointments because, you know, like you said, it's week one. But I thought Dallas I don't know if it was Cleveland was that bad. I know Deshaun Watson was bad, but guys miss balls too. And the defense, they shut down Garrett. Miles got they had a game plan for him, but they couldn't stop Micah Parsons and Dallas. So that's one of my surprises. But surprises, disappointments in week one.
Well, I thought the Dallas-Cleveland game was a big surprise, but then I thought about it. I said, oh, God, I forgot who their offense coordinator was, and that's Ken Dorsey. And Ken Dorsey, you know, Josh Allen just seemed to go downhill under Dorsey. He scored a lot of points, but he turned the ball over all the time.
Right.
So that's the big claim to fame of Brady. Since he took over as offense coordinator here, Josh Allen's turnovers have gone down. But, you know, that was I thought the Bears beating the Titans. I like this Bears team. They came up here, and they were really – I know it was preseason, but, man, the physicality against the Bills, they just out-muscled the Bills, so much so that McDermott called a meeting – the next day and said, hey, I don't care if this is preseason or not. You're not going to be tossed around like that. And I think that I can't remember the final score. I think it was 33-6. The Bears beat the Bills during preseason. But it was just a physical game. I mean, the Bears were physical. And as you well know, their defensive coordinator was a defensive line coach for the Buffalo Bills, Eric Washington. Eric Washington really should have been the Bills' defensive coordinator. But McDermott wanted to call the plays. He never gave him the title of assistant head coach, defensive line coach, wouldn't give him the title of defense coordinator and call the defense. Well, the Bears gave Eric Washington an opportunity, and then McDermott, he turns around and gives Babich the title of defense coordinator, and this year Babich is calling the plays and not McDermott. So to me, you know, it's that same old story. I mean, Leslie Frazier. I mean, this guy had a top five defense in Buffalo for 6 years. That's unheard. He doesn't get another shot. And now he had to leave. He's a defense coordinator out in Seattle. It's just the same old, same old. When do you start giving people fairness based on what they do on and off the field? And I think you're seeing this again with Steve Wilkes. I mean, he gets run out of San Francisco. He was the one keeping you in the game. I mean, they were shutting Pat Mahomes down the first half.
I'm surprised Robert Sala, unless they look at him as not, you know, just Middle Eastern, so it's a whole totally, that he kept it. He still got his job, basically,
right.
At this point. But you're right. It's if we're not holding the seat at quarterback, we're holding the seat for another coach to come
right.
in and this whiz. And by the way, Klingler, who coached in Arizona, has that same mentality where Dorsey is, where they score a lot of points, but you can get your quarterback killed. They
right.
they empty the backfield all the time, and they don't care, especially now, you know, if you got a brother in there. But I'm happy. I hope Brissett gets another gig once this kid takes over and then he goes to move on. Because I promise you, and you know this, he's probably as good as, if not better than, more than half of the quarterbacks in the league. Certainly the back.
Absolutely. I'm a Brissett guy. I just don't think he's ever been given the true reins. It's always like he's a bridge quarterback, you know.
Right.
And I love Tyrod Taylor. I think Tyrod Taylor had one of the most accurate long balls I've ever seen.
Right.
And he still does. I mean, he's taking a beating from the physical, you know, being an athletic quarterback, what they call an athletic quarterback, but he's taken a lot of hits over the years. And, you know, but I loved the accuracy of his arm. I don't think he ever got a fair shot under McDermott. McDermott had made up his mind that he was cleaning house, and Tyrod was, he gave him the 1 year, and after that, he was gone.
Collateral damage. Which quarterback, which rookie quarterback outside of the kid in Minnesota who's out for the year?
LA, you went on mute.
I know you heard the question about which rookie quarterback you think will have the best year outside of the kid from Minnesota because he's out for the season. But Daniels in Washington, you got Bo Nix in Denver. He's going to take some hits. I'm missing one. Coming out, which rookie quarterback you think will be the best in terms of if they get to play at some point, let's say half the year, will be good. Okay, and the kid in New England.
I'll get back to you on that one in about maybe the fifth or sixth week.
Okay, because I was going to say Washington and Denver chose to start their guy. So, and the kid Khalib Williams in Chicago. So you got three starters, one on the bench and one out for the year. And so Williams, I know you said you was impressed with the Bears, but their offense really didn't do much of anything. They scored on defense, special teams, right, and they got a field goal and that kind of thing. But I just think the guys, if they can weather the storm physically and mentally, the ones that get the play are going to be ahead of the ones to that sit. If you drafted this kid to be the franchise, you can keep him on. I would rather you play him a game or two in the preseason and then start him rather than bring him in, because it's just, how is he going to learn?
Right.
You know, he's got the game is fast. You can't get the fast part of the game unless you're on the field.
That's right.
Your licks. Peyton Manning said he got 28 interceptions in his rookie year.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I don't want your thoughts.
I agree with you totally. It is speedy. You're not going to learn the game. So there's only so much you're going to learn in the classroom. But, you know, you don't want to go out there and get yourself killed. But
yeah.
I think by the fifth, sixth, or seventh game, we're just about going to know how things are going to go. Because there's some rookies on these rosters as far as the quarterback position that it will be determined by where that team is standing. If that team is not competitive or they're in the hunt, it's different. But if they're not in the hunt, you need to get that guy out there and get him as much experience as he can get. And I think you know, on rookie quarterbacks, let me get back to you on that one. It's a little early, but
I can understand, because how many C.J. McClouds do you have coming in the league and doing what he did, winning the division, getting a playoff win, getting them to the playoffs? You could have made an argument, Stroud, I should have said,
right,
made an argument for him being MVP.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. He had a great year. And I'm going to be very interested to see his relationship with Stephon Diggs as the season goes. I mean, Steph Diggs is a great player. I mean, there's no question about it. His problem has not been his athletic ability. His problem is issues start within the framework of the team.
Playing nice with the teammates.
Yeah. He just got it, you know. Right after the Cincinnati game, L.A., we're coming down where the tunnel is at the old stadium. You know, they got the new stadium is under construction. Diggs goes in the locker room before McDermott gets in, goes and grabs his stuff on his way to his car in full uniform. Just after a playoff game. You don't do that until the coach speaks. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
Coach won't tell you what to do. If you lost the game in the playoffs, you got to get your end of the year. That's in your contract. You know,
right.
You got to do your end of the year exit interviews, physicals, everything else. This guy went and got his stuff full uniform, heading to his car.
I seen Brady do that, but he was getting on the bus. Brady has that, I'm not your friend anymore. I'm taking my ball home and I'm leaving.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you're a cancer in the locker room, or it's no way, whether it's Allen's or his fault, that if they're not getting along, that thing ain't going to last.
But you know what? I've always thought, L.A., when they brought Diggs in, I always admired Diggs, a great player. There's no question. He's a tremendous athlete, great player. But when you get a young quarterback and you put him in the offensive room with an elite receiver that you didn't come in with together, I think it puts a disadvantage on a young quarterback. Whereas Diggs, I mean, they had some great – I mean, these guys had some great stats together over the years, but they just could not win a championship. But I have always wondered, was it a hamper to have Allen – you know, the quarterback is supposed to be the guy. And I did not see that type of relationship with him and Diggs other than their production for the most part on the field. I mean, you can't deny what they accomplished stat-wise on the field. And, you know, they were unstoppable for the most part. But I'm interested to see how Keon Coleman grows with Josh Allen at this point, because Keon Coleman is a big body receiver. He's got football, good speed. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Jerry Rice, but I thought he had a good debut yesterday.
Even though I
wasn't that impressed with the play calling of Brady, but I think Keon Coleman is a player to be reckoned with. He made a catch yesterday that showed me that this kid is here. You know, he's going to be one that continues to improve. But the Bills continue to bring in, you know, they always try these quick fixes with, like, Von Miller. They should have never brought in Von Miller. Why would you do that? And give him enormous amounts of money to a 33-year-old, you know, 33 for Von Miller. I mean, that's about 100, you know, in football years. And then Von Miller, I don't know if I showed you the picture. He comes in the post-game press conference yesterday with no shirt on. I'm like, what's wrong with this? Is a professional NFL locker room. You're a future Hall of Famer. He comes in with his game pants, barefooted, no shirt on. I'm like, I've been out there 30 years. My first interview was Thurman Thomas. I asked him, Bruce Smith, all of them. I've interviewed them all. You never in my 30 years anybody ever walk in the post game where all the star players are supposed to come and the head coach. You come in there with no shirt on. And you're a future Hall of Famer. This is not no young kid. And so something's wrong with him.
Well,
and you know I'm going to say something, because it's, I'm like, dude, you're a reflection of more than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're a reflection of all of us. You're a father. I'm a father. You want your daughter to walk in here and you got on no shirt, just looking crazy?
Mm-hmm.
And you've had troubles as it is. You should be on your best behavior. He just got accused of domestic violence a couple of years ago. Apparently she dropped the charges, which is, you know, that's his business. But to walk into a press conference of a professional football franchise with no shirt on is a classless act.
Right.
And I am going to say something to the Bills. I think we go out there for media day tomorrow. And, you know, I'm good with all the media people. I'm not going to make it a big public thing. I'm saying this to you because we're good. This is your show. I appreciate you, the work that you do, and I think we owe it to each other to talk about stuff like that.
That's right.
But this guy walked into a post-game press conference, no shirt on, tattoos everywhere. I'm like, you're not a kid. You're a future Hall of Famer. You got the numbers. But you got no common sense. What's wrong with you?
Well, thank God it wasn't the press, the post-game interviews wasn't in the locker room, because you know when you sometimes you walk in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the locker,
they
room
they birthday
the locker room's a different thing, L.A.
Right.
When you ask the guy in the locker room, say, you got a minute, he said, let me get dressed. That's normal. Now, some guys will talk without their shirts on in the locker room.
Right.
We're talking about the podium with the background. NFL Network, national news. I'm thinking the NFL, he's going to have an envelope in his locker tomorrow. Usually on Tuesday, they're going to let you know you're going to lose some money doing it. I'm going to pretty sure I can't see the NFL letting that go, and they not telling McDermott, don't you ever let him out on national. A post game of an NFL game is national news. He's in there with no shirt on.
Hey, look, could you say two words? Staff infection. He ain't got no shoes on either.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can get all kinds of guys, any kind of thing, walking around, no shoes, no shirt. Man, yeah, that's, you're right. You're absolutely right. And you should address it. If nobody else addresses it, it'd be good that you do it because it shows the consciousness that you have. It's way beyond in between the lines and everything else. When you do,
matter of fact, when we get off the air, I have all their numbers in the media department. I might have to make that call. You know, I just didn't like it. I felt I've been out here 30 years. When I started, Marv Levy was the head coach. Then Wade Phillips, then Greg Williams, then Dick Geron. Dick Geron came after Malarkey. Malarkey was after Greg Williams.
Right.
Never in 30 years have I seen a professional. Most times they're dressed. You know, they let them wear their gold and all that stuff now.
Mm.
But, you know, a lot of times it's suit and tie.
Right.
But after the game, they let them still have on their undergarment and maybe their game pants, but to have on clothes.
Right.
But this guy came out with no shirt on, no shoes, just Von Miller.
Mm.
And I just think, bro, you're playing on the shoulders of Joe Green, the Ernie Holmes, the great class players. You're a future Hall of Famer. You've got to accept that responsibility that you're playing for more than just yourself and your salary. You got kids.
Yep.
I just thought it was an appalling act on his part. And I think he shouldn't recant ever doing that again. I like Vaughn. Vaughn has been a pretty fun guy since he's been here. Unfortunately, he got hurt. But yesterday, to come out with no shirt on?
You mentioned the guys, he's the shoulders. It's Bruce Smith, right there.
Bruce do that.
Class
acts. Thurman Thomas, class. Andre, class acts, bro. They were all there. And you... Here you come out into the post game area. You got national media, you got local media, you got some of them. There's at least I counted maybe six or seven women of the media that were in the room. I just you know they're allowed in the locker room,
right?
And I understand, but the locker room's a different animal. Most times they'll tell you, "Let me get my clothes on. I'll accommodate you." But
right.
He comes to the podium, no shirt on.
Yep.
And I don't think McDermott knew that. I'm sure somebody told him by now, so it might be handled already. But
right.
McDermott is pretty strict on that. And I'm sure if he knows about it, he talked to him about it. Because
too much. Final thing, I know you got to go. Did you have any preseason predictions on the Super Bowl? Who gets there?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Patrick Mahomes. Again.
Kansas City and who?
I got Kansas City and San Francisco again. They're going to ruin my T-shirt collection. You see, that's all I collect from the Super Bowl. I got New Orleans and the Colts. And because Pat Mahomes is such a great player, him and Tom Brady, they have messed up my collection. Too much Patriots, and now too much Kansas and San Francisco.
Yeah. It would be interesting.
I think
the NFC is more wide open than the AFC.
Absolutely. I don't see any. The only team I think that's close to Kansas City is who we saw last week. I think Baltimore is a very, very good football team. Very good football team. You know, and... I'm always going to be a fan of Pittsburgh. Always. I've been a fan of Pittsburgh my entire life, and I've always respected Mike Tomlin. You know, this is a guy that, you know, I'm a young guy covering Super Bowls back in 2007. I'm trying to get a question in. All of a sudden, he just turned to me and said, I need to take a question from this brother right here. Mm. And I looked and said, he's talking to me. And, you know, the question all of a sudden left my head, you know. I'm like, I got to come up with something quick because he got me in the spot. And I've always respected him for that. And I always wish the Pittsburgh Steelers well because of that. And I think the Steelers have been above board in trying to help people of color, you know, get to higher levels. The Rooney Rule, Art Rooney, the Rooney family, how they, you know, the Bill Nunn Award is named after their famous scout.
Yeah.
I just love the Steeler organization as a whole.
Yeah, and I think that not only Rooney Rule and helping assistant coaches, let's talk about Tomlin's tree. They always talk about everybody else, Sean McVay's and everybody else under the sun, the Shanahan's, and he's got a tree. Tree might have started with, I can't think of Tony Dungy's, under Tony Dungy, but he has a tree. And putting down people like Michael Vick, giving him a last chance, and some of these other players that he gave an opportunity to of color that nobody else really wanted. I heard that he wanted a sit-down and a trial with Colin Kaepernick, but the bigger powers than him shut it down. So I digress. Pat, before you go, let people know about the show. And I know you record and podcast. Tell everybody about the show, because the great thing about your show is far beyond just sports in terms of the guests that you have on.
Right. I'm even doing investments.
A lot of people on.
Yeah, I'm trying to get people interested in the marketplace. We do a personal investment program once a week. And then for my interviews, it's Night Talk with the Mighty Oba, where I just interview people beyond just sports on the various topics that we do. But you can reach me on Facebook, Instagram, follow me there. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to be on the Bachelor Pad. It's always a great honor to be on with you.
Well, if you have, and we can talk off air, if you have any of the podcasts, I can post, you know, even if it's snippets, I'll be more than happy to do it. So, like we did in the past.
Okay, I'll definitely send you those. I've got all kind of stuff.
Okay.
I would be honored for you to air them whenever you can.
Absolutely. Pat, I appreciate you, bro, man. Of course, we're going to do this throughout the year. And thanks, man. Thanks for staying on so long, too.
Hey, you're going to have to come on with me one of these days, buddy.
Just let me know.
All right. It's coming.
All right. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Take care now.
All right. Pat Freeman, always good to have him on the Mighty Oba. Of course, Night Talk with the Mighty Oba, you can catch on Facebook, and we'll be posting a lot of different shows that he has, some of his podcasts, and he's got plenty and really good ones. This is the Bachelor News Radio Show.
HBCU Pro Sports Media Association, providing accurate and comprehensive coverage of historically Black colleges and university sports, news, features, commentary, analysis, and multimedia content from the leading voices in Black media. We are committed to telling the stories of HBCU athletes and programs. Visit us at HBCUProSportsMedia.com.
Hey, this is Craig Batchelor Jr.
And this is Kevin Batchelor.
And this is Samuel Smoltey.
And you're listening to
The Bachelor News Radio Show
on the Bachelor News Radio Network.
Times have changed. The power to create your own influence through your own network is now in your own hands. As a creative, marketing is essential. And you're limited to the number of marketing vehicles you have access to by the amount of money you have in your budget. We can help get you exposure all over the U.S., Africa, U.K., for as little as $35 a month on our Roku and Amazon Fire Network. Big Mind Entertainment, we're the vehicle for creators of today and tomorrow.
Hi, this is Carl Edwards here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You want to make a difference? It's simple. Be responsible. Plan ahead. Designate before you celebrate. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. We thank Pat Freeman for coming on, sharing some knowledge on week one of the NFL. Switching gears, I want to bring in my two good friends. They host their own show called UM The Law. It airs on Facebook Live, and we'll get into what that show is about. Hell, once you hear what they have to say, you're going to know what the show is about because they always bring the noise. From Oklahoma, he has been a veteran chief for quite some time, a good friend, Chief Virgil Green. I'm sorry, Minnesota. I apologize for that.
Are you all right?
And of course, from Memphis, Tennessee, you want to make sure I get that right, the University of Memphis, correct, Chief Humphrey?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I'm going to make sure from earlier. And a good friend, although he's a Cowboy fan, I don't know what happened in his life or something went wrong somewhere, but he's still a good friend.
Wow.
Hey, man, you know, the Cowboys won, so, you know, he's on a whole nother level, brother.
Well, no, it's early in the season.
Hey, look, you guys look better offensively than my Steelers, but we both got the dub. But let me ask you this real quick on that tip. You happy that Dallas finally signed Dak Prescott, and they still got to sign Parsons at some point?
No, I think some of that money should have went to Micah. I mean, Dak is, I'm a Cowboy fan. I just think Dak is just not consistent. He's inconsistent. But I tell you, he's not a bad quarterback. It's just, can he win the big one? And that's the thing. Can he win the big one?
Is he worth the money?
Is he worth the money?
Yeah.
I mean,
I had a Cowboy fan tell me he is consistently inconsistent.
Yes.
So to your point, that's the issue there. But I wanted to get into a couple of very crucial and important topics, both in terms of law enforcement. You guys have done it for decades. Tyreek Hill, staying in the sports realm, if you will, was on his way, and it's of course all over social media now. People taking pictures, on his way to Hard Rock Cafe, which is the home of the Miami Dolphins, where they play, get ready for. And if you know anything about football, like I do, before the game, you do your walkthroughs, your stretching, you got to go over the game plan again, you get with your position coach, and you make sure you're on the same page and going over things when it's third and long and different that he plays wide receiver. So he's running obviously late. So obviously he's speeding. So and you guys understand this being around the stadiums and security. Obviously there's going to be security around the stadium. Hell, when I covering the Panthers and some other football and basketball teams, but mainly football, there are always going to be police around because those are the times where people some people get out of hand, A, and then B, you know, you can write a ticket. You can catch them, right? So he was recklessly driving and got pulled for speeding, And of course, the later the officer said he didn't have a seatbelt on. But at the risk of going back and forth of all the details of what happened, I want to ask this question because, you know, some people said that Tyreek was wrong. Tyreek even said maybe I should have not rolled the window back up when he asked for license registration, and then I rolled it back. I should have left it down. Blase, blase. But some people are blaming Tyreek Hill. I'll start with you, Virgil, that if he had just kind of kept his mouth shut, yes, sir, no, sir, follow the rules, follow the law, license registration, keep your hands where I can see it, now all that kind of stuff, that none of which of these things would have happened to him. And so my question is that a fair point? He was dragged out of the car. He was handcuffed. They wanted him to get on his knees. He had said, hey, I just had surgery on the knee. And trust me, having a knee issue is better to run on the knee than get on your knee. It's hard to get on your knee after you have a scapulary surgery, let alone real surgery on the ACL, MCL, whatever. So I understand him as an athlete, but to go that far and then put the initial blame or any blame, right, or most of the blame on Tyreek Hill, I think is unfair because we've seen situations where people have complied, Chief, and died or was wounded or still went to jail or whatever the case may be. Of course, the fatality being the worst. So what say you to the people, and how do you even feel about the incident? Who shares the blame? Who gets the blame? And all of those things.
Well, I'm going to say, L.A., first, thank you for having us on your show. And when I looked at the full body cam footage that's been released, even those who – you know, recorded it on their cell phones and they put it up on social media. This all started over a traffic violation. And so for it to escalate to the point that it did, and you asked the question, does Tyreek Hill bear some accountability with this here? Yeah, probably so. Now, but the part of what who we are in law enforcement is the professional side of it. The one thing that I don't think too many people have picked up on, but I picked up on it on one of the videos that's been released, is that one of the Miami-Dade motorcycle officers said, you know who that is, don't you? That's Tyreek Hill. You really have to be listening to hear that one, the multiple videos.
I heard that.
So one of them knew who he was. And so, you know, they pulled him over. All this here initially started somewhere as he was getting off the turnpike to get to go toward the stadium. And so he pulls over. They ask him, hey, roll your window down. They knock on his window. He rolls it down, asks for his license. He gives it to him. He rolls the window back up. The officer says, knocks on his window, roll your window back down. He was like, I gave you what you wanted. I roll my window back up. Now, we're getting into a deal. Okay, should he left it down? After the fact, he probably would say, yeah, I guess I should have left it down. But
he said that since then he could have handled that a little bit better.
Yeah, he could have handled it better.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna play both sides of this here because we have all seen and we've all heard of black men who have been pulled over by the police who have fully cooperated, but some kind of way they've been jerked out of the car. And we're not talking about people who law enforcement recognize as a celebrity. These are just average people like you, you know, like everybody else. And so the situation turns. Now, if the officer was going to write him a ticket, write him a ticket. Now you are questioning my authority, and I'm ordering you to do something. And I said this earlier on a talk show this morning, that we need to get out of this here attitude that if I tell you to do something, you better do it. Now, we're all grown men and women. Now, police officers need to understand, for 8 hours, 10 hours, or 12 hours, you have a lot of authority, you have a lot of power. When you get off of work and you're on your way home, you may get stopped in another jurisdiction and they may not know you. Now, if that person treats you, because I'm going to say this, L.A., and Keith, you can chime, we don't even know how to treat each other right. But we're expecting our officers to go out here and treat every citizen with the 100% level of respect. But we don't even know how to treat each other with respect. So was Tyreek Hill wrong? Yeah. But I put more of this on the officers than I do him, because what was the reason for getting, for pulling him out of the car, handcuffing him, and then what was the reason for the other players being handcuffed and being detained? But it took officials from the Miami Dolphins to come out there. And L.A., a lot of people don't realize that those individuals who work on that security apparatus with Miami Dolphins, they're former Miami-Dade officers, or, you know, they're from multiple jurisdictions around, but they've retired, so now they're working for the Miami. So they know they're well-known. And so things just really escalated and to the point to where he never should have been handcuffed, never. But the whole thing, should he left his window down? My thing of it is, where was the officer's safety issue? Number one, the officer knew who he was. How many people riding around Miami are in a almost a $200,000
car?
Yeah. And in the fact, you know who you're dealing with. So, and you know you're right there by the stadium. And so I think they were trying to listen to one of the other players. They normally get to the stadium about 3 hours ahead of time. So I don't think he was really just, like, running late. Maybe he punched the gas a little bit too much. I mean, he is in one of the most – a Corvette that is pretty – it's got a lot of power to it.
Well, that wasn't a Corvette, brother. That's about a $500,000 car he was in.
Oh, so, I thought it was one of the.
Some people said between 300 and 500. Chief Humphrey, let me ask you this, because, again, some people say woulda, shoulda, coulda, and if he didn't do this, he didn't do that. I even heard, I'm not a fan. I know him, but I'm not a Stephen A. Say, well,
Stephen,
you know,
a, yeah.
when the cops come up, you know, I just roll down the windows and get my license registration and shut up. But again, the point is, people lost their lives doing the same thing. So I truly, when I say this, I get what Chief Green said. He could have, you know, after the fact, he could have rolled his window down. He could have whatever. But I think two things, Chief Humphrey, I want you to address. He could have done that, but it didn't, as Chief Green said, justify him being in cuffs for a speeding ticket, right, or reckless driving, whatever the actual charge was. And number two, people have to understand, as black men specifically in this country, that we get frustrated. I find it hard to believe, Chief Humphrey, that this has never happened to Tyreek Hill, because he was mouthing off, right? He was emotional. He was like, what are you doing? I mean, really? You put the cuffs on me? You can see when he was in cuffs, he turned his head to the left, saying something to the cop. He was mouthing off. He was upset. I probably would have got upset myself, because we walk while being black and driving while being black, and a lot of us have gone through this. Hell, both of you are law enforcement for years, and you've told me in the past that you've been stopped. So there has to be some kind of frustration in that this got escalated too fast, Chief Humphrey.
Well, let me just say this, man. Can y'all hear me clearly?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. So let me just say this. There was nothing that I saw. As a matter of fact, I had somebody I unfollowed today on Facebook because basically their immediate response was Tyreek was wrong, period, point blank, and that if he would have just done this, it never would have happened. That's absolutely false. First of all, he didn't do anything that I saw that justified him being put in handcuffs. He definitely didn't do anything I saw for them to put him on the ground like they did, which was a felony takedown. The way that they did that, put him on the ground, pull him out of the car, put him face down on the ground, that is a felony. Those are things you do for felony apprehensions. Okay.
Only thing they didn't do, Chief, was draw their weapons.
Only thing they didn't
just
do
say
was draw
that
their
for
weapons.
The audience again, the people to understand that was a felony because the officer who had him was trying to get him on the ground. Here comes another one and gets this kind of wrestling chokehold and takes him down. Talk about that's a felony. He said that's a felony takedown.
The way that you do that, the actions that they took against him was against someone who was actively aggressive. He wasn't actively aggressive. He was verbally noncompliant. But, you know, it comes down to basically he said, I'm not going to roll the window down. So you mean to tell me for a traffic citation, and, you know, we talk about reckless driving, but this is the deal where I think we can't miss. They estimated which law enforcement, we are trained observers. And they, amongst themselves, you know, they even admitted that they didn't have any kind of speeding device. They estimated that he was doing no more than 60 miles an hour in a 45-mile-per-hour zone. So to me, how is that reckless? Number one, now if you're talking about somebody cutting in and out of traffic or something like that, okay. But you didn't say all that. You just said that he was speeding no more than 60 miles an hour in a 45-mile-per-hour zone. There was nothing that I saw for him to be drug out of the car. Yeah, maybe he pissed. What he did, he shouldn't have reacted. And he's even admitted, I should not have said some of the things that I say. But no matter what Tyreek said, he didn't deserve what happened to him. And at the end of the day, you can't justify that type of force based on a traffic ticket because somebody is verbally noncompliant. And we've got to start realizing that, you know, we have these rights. As police officers, we have these rights that we can utilize. That was an excessive amount of force that was unnecessary. Based on the fact that they got pissed off because this man was not complying or because he said something they didn't like. Now, we're always focusing and we're always talking about de-escalation. That was the perfect time to deploy de-escalation techniques. That basically, sir, let me talk to you. This is why we're being stopped. We don't know if that would have worked or not because they didn't even attempt to do it. They automatically went for, let's pull him out of the car. Now, Campbell, go ahead.
Well, I mean, immediately their attitude was, we're ordering you, we're telling you what to do. And you know, not too many black men are going to just let you just belittle them and disrespect them. And I think this is the thing that officers need to, and some things you can't train because some people have attitudes, but it comes back to how do you want somebody to treat you? And almost, Keith, that's just not even a thing now because at the end of the day, it's about I have the authority and I'm telling you what to do, and if you don't do it, this is what's going to happen to you. Remember what happened in Louisville with the golfer, with the incident with Scheffler?
Yeah, but Virgil, let me say this too, Virgil. You know, and you gotta look at it this way. You know, we go back to what Tyreek could have done differently. when I talk to young men, young black men, I tell them, you can never win a court case on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, we do have that obligation. Someone say, well, he didn't have to roll his window down. Yeah, he was being detained. A traffic stop is a detention. And you're being detained for a traffic violation. Yeah, the officer asks you to roll your window down. Yeah, you got to comply with that. You got to identify yourself because, number one, you got to have your driver's license in order to drive a car on public roadway. So they got to identify you.
But
they got to identify you.
So let's say you get your license. He got his license. So let's put this in there. Let's say it was pouring down rain. Are we expecting that person is going to leave their window down the whole time?
No.
They're
on
their traffic stop?
That's where common sense and emotional intelligence comes in. Because you got to be able to adapt to the situation. Is it worth me as a police officer on a traffic stop, okay, to become physical because somebody don't want to roll their windows down? Number one, what do we tell young officers? You can identify. You know who the person is. You can identify them. If it's that egregious, you can get a warrant for that person and arrest them later.
Let me ask you both this question. I'll stay with you, Chief Humphrey, first, because a lot of people said, well, it was for officer safety because he had tinted windows. Hell, on YouTube, I could see him through the glass myself. So if I could see him on TV doing somebody's camera, and one camera was the police cam, I could see him through the glass, then why couldn't the – so my question is that in this particular case, officer safety, they couldn't see him because it was too dark, so they didn't know if he's going to pull a gun, somebody said, and all this other stuff.
Well,
is that valid in this case, Chief Humphrey?
Officer safety is subjective because I can't see what they saw. This is what we think we saw, but that also has to articulate why he felt it was a safety issue. So it's kind of difficult sometimes to argue with them definitively because I don't know what they saw from what angle or whatever. But what I will say is they knew who he was. And even if he said, I'm not going to roll the window down, then you deal with that accordingly at a later time because you know who he is, you know where to find him, you can identify him. But we're missing a whole different side of this, guys. Tyreek Hill has a violent past. And so now this is going to be the interesting part of it. Are they going to try to utilize that as a defense? Because he has been arrested for domestic violence and stuff like that. But that was in the past. But I can see that coming up here as a defense thing because of his past, which has nothing to do with the incident that occurred this week, because that happened 8 years ago.
That sounds like a lawyer trying to either defend it. No, let's say a prosecutor trying to prosecute someone, and then they go through the whole case, and then they go, "Oh, wait, but here's the other thing." They thought he was violent, then they should have put that in the report when they came out and said, well, this is why we stopped him.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I'm waiting on that to come out because they're going to say, well, he's got a violent past and he's done this, blah, 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 blah. That has nothing to do with the incident at hand. The incident at hand was, yes, Tyreek, and he's admitted he should have handled that differently. But Tyreek's actions, even what we saw, did not rise to the level of him being aggressively pulled out of the car, put face down on hot pavement, handcuffed, sit on the curb, and chastised, then verbally chastised by an officer. And then you have another player who stopped to check on his welfare. He never walked between those officers. He was just asking questions. And then he's handcuffed and detained. So at the end of the day, it was unnecessary force. They were pissed off at him for whatever reason, whether it's a personal issue or whatever. But the amount of force that was utilized and the actions of those officers was totally inappropriate. you, and then we come down to the obligation to intervene. Nobody tried to intervene. No officer tried to intervene and say, "Hey, man, hey, calm down, man. This, hey, you kind of wound up right here. You go over there, and we'll deal with it." Nobody did that. Nobody.
I'm going to come back to that. I'm going to come back to that. But Chief Green, the same question in terms of the tent. But as Chief Humphrey said, put him on the ground. On the ground, he wasn't even on the sidewalk because people were walking. He was on the ground. Goes back to the demasculating a black man and humiliating him in front of everybody who knew he was Tyreek Hill, Chief Green.
Yeah, well, you know, L.A., these guys, they knew who he was. One of them even said, "Stop your crying." And Tyreek Hill, a grown man, wasn't crying. Basically, you know, he was agitated. He was upset. But you got an officer who has an attitude and says, "Well, stop your crying. You know, if you would have did this, you know, whatever." I'm going to go back to something that you brought up about, you know, what Keith brought up about his past. In 2014, when he played football in Oklahoma with Oklahoma State, the incident happened with a girlfriend at the university. 2018, the charges are dropped. They went away. Then he has the incident in Kansas City, and then he had the recent incident with the model earlier this year at something that went through some kind of training, football training camp. He's never had a bad encounter with law enforcement. He's never had any kind of bad encounter. He even said that he has respect for law enforcement. And so
he wants to be a cop. He wants to be a cop, he said.
Yeah, he even said that. And so once again, this comes down to this male attitude of, "I'm going to tell you what to do, and if you don't do it, this is what's going to happen to you." And we have seen this time and time again. Let's just go back to the military officer who was pepper sprayed inside of his car because he didn't want to get out the car. He wanted to get out the car, or he was getting out the car too slow, and that officer ended up pepper spraying him. As a result of that, he ended up losing his job. I go back to something that me and Keith have talked about on our podcast a lot. The culture of policing, it is a problem. And we continue to see these guys who have these anger issues and nobody around them, as we saw with Tyreek Hill, not a single one of those motorcycle officers walked up to him and said, "Hey, listen, man, that's Tyreek Hill. If you're going to write him a ticket, let him go on about his business." That was that simple. That could have been handled like that, and they could have went on. But no, and then they turned their attentions to the other players who were just stopping to make sure that he was okay. So I go back to, and we always say, yeah, there's bad apples. Okay, but what about the people that's around them? What are they doing to intervene to make sure that stuff like this here doesn't happen? Because somebody clearly could have intervened to make sure that this situation didn't escalate to him getting handcuffs, other players getting handcuffs, him going to the ground, embarrassing him again. Where's the humanity in what we saw? There was none. And so, again, we talk about who was wrong. Did Tyreek bear some responsibility? Yeah, he did. But at the end of the day, I'm going to say, would either one of us would have wanted to be treated like that?
Well, I will tell you this.
Let me just let people know we're talking with Chief Virgil Green and Chief Keith Humphrey on the Bachelor News show. Real quick, go back to you, Chief Humphrey. You mentioned, both of you actually mentioned, you know, all these officers could have stepped in. And there is some stuff out there, and I need you to educate my audience on how it works in terms of step in. Should they step in? Are they allowed to step in to the point where the first officer on the scene kind of takes a step back. Shannon Sharp was talking about he was at an event or at some kind of party or something, and Top told him to move along, and he started to, and another cop who knew who he was said, "Nah, you good." And the other cop came back and said, "I told him to move along." And the other cop said, "Well, that's Shannon Sharp. He's cool." Sort of like, you know, the guy said, the cop said, "That's Tyreek Hill." And I guess the officer who outranked or had more tenure said, "I told him to move along," so he had to move along. So my question is to both of you, start with you, Chief Humphrey. Is it a rank thing, or is the first officer on the scene in charge? And can people step in and say, "Nah, man, we can't do this," or pull them to the side or her side,
yeah,
and say, "We can't do this," and sort of de-escalate it that way?
Well, you know, there's mandates that have come down now to where you have policies that are called duty to intervene, which you're required. It doesn't matter your rank. It doesn't matter your tenure. It matters the fact of when you see something that is escalating, and you believe that it could get even worse, you have a responsibility and obligation to step in and de-escalate it. If that even means pulling that officer out of the way, stepping in between it, or taking the subject or the citizen to the side or whatever, you have an obligation and a responsibility to intervene until everything is calm. And so sometimes a lot of it is a hesitancy. Some officers are hesitant to do it because, number one, we don't want to make our partner look weak. Number two, we don't want to step in because now we're getting in their way. And others just don't think they can. They don't think they should. They don't think they can. Some are afraid. And so, you know, but at the end of the day, what I think we have to realize is that if we're going to talk about this de-escalation, and we're going to talk about, we got policies that talks about duties to intervene and de-escalating, we got to use them. And if you're not willing to utilize those tactics to de-escalate things, then what's the use of having those policies? Number one, why are you a police officer? Because there, like I said, there were so many opportunities, L.A. and Virgil and to the audience. There were so many opportunities that could have been stopped. That could have been stopped. It could have even been one that's, "Hey, man, just go on about your way, slow down." Well, then people will say, "Well, man, you letting him get away because of who he is." Okay, is it that big a deal? Now, we don't know if there's been a history of him speeding in the city. We don't know that. I mean, you know, we don't know, and it doesn't matter because we're talking about it that particular time. So it comes down to the fact of the matter is, as a police officers, we miss the opportunity to be the bigger person in that situation because you had four officers, and there's nothing we can do as police officers, L.A., and Virgil knows this, to justify the actions with four officers out there. There was nothing we could do to justify that. There's nothing those officers can say.
There's no police protocol in place saying anything, any guidelines. Any officer can use discretion to step in to de-escalate in those types of situations, especially if it's a speeding violation.
Well, so, L.A., one of the things you asked about, you know, so every agency, almost every agency around the country has updated their policies where there's a duty to intervene. And some have put language in there that gives specific guidelines to officers and supervisors to know when you see these things happening, you need to intervene. And all this here comes from what happened with George Floyd up in Minneapolis. And we've seen sergeants who have escalated the situation to the point to where
a female officer stepped in to remove him from the situation that he was escalating, and that sergeant turned around and choked the female officer. And none of the male officers around her did anything to intervene to make sure that this sergeant, who is their supervisor, backed off. So we have, again, it goes back to the culture of policing, that we have officers, men and women, who will not at that moment, some will, but we have others who are around them who will not stand up and say, "Nah, listen, I don't care if you are the assistant chief. What you're doing is wrong, and I'm going to remove you, or we got to remove you." That's what, but when those things happen, people need to make sure that they're supporting those officers. Because, L.A., we've seen situations where officers have done so and reported the abuse, but then they become the subject of being harassed by their own peers. And so, again, I just go back to this whole culture of policing, and it's not in a good space. But I want to go back to something that now people are talking about. Tyreek Hill's past. Why all of a sudden does this black man's past got anything to do with what happened on Sunday? People are going back to 2014 when he was in college, to what happened in Kansas City, to what happened a couple, you know, earlier in the year. But nobody went back and said anything about when the white golfer got a, you know, that incident that happened with him. But people in the unions are so quick to jump on and find and make a black person look bad, but they're not saying what these officers did was bad. And I got an issue with that, that we don't stand up and we don't speak out and say, wait a second, now you want to drag this man even more than what you have, because what they did, they dragged that man out of that car like he was some dog. They probably would treat their dog better than they treated Tyreek Hill. And they clearly knew who he was. And the officers, the majority of them, I was going to say it right. But, again, this is something that we all as black men should be upset about.
I know what you're going to say. I'm going to say it, L.A.
These guys were Puerto Rican officers, and half the Puerto Ricans don't really care about black folks. And so it comes down to a race issue. They're minorities as well. But at the end of the day, they look like they're more, that they got more, they're better than we are. But come on, man, this is a black man, and you're going to pull him out the car like he's some dog? But, and then we
well,
not going to stand up.
Let me just put the disclaimer on this, too. So, you know, I want people to know that I'm saying this. I was going to say that. Brown people are our cousins, right? But I know for a fact in living down in that area, first of all, Florida, notoriously, talk about bad apples. They got some officers. I've been stopped down there for some silly stuff. So I'm not surprised it happened, especially Miami-Dade in that area. The second thing is, in that area, you are very correct. Not only they don't like, some don't like black people, but they think they're better. And because there's so many different people, Latinos and Latinas down there, they stick their chest out like they the shit, right? And they keep forgetting that the Europeans still want you to clean their hotels and pick their crops and everything else, and you still not at the table. But I digress. Here's my thing. It's entirely impossible or unfathomable, guys, to think that some people said, well, the officers, because, you know, Chief Humphrey, you said maybe they know him, maybe they don't, I don't know. Maybe they knew he had a history of speeding. They knew him that he was, you know, camping out. They were under the underpass anyway. A lot of situations in those stadiums, they're set up like that anyway. But it's highly unlikely that if they didn't know, they ran his plate fast enough to know that he had a history of domestic violence, and that, even the stretch of that, has nothing to do with condemn him on that if you want. That's a moral issue. That's a whole different conversation. But even if that was the case, it has nothing to do with the takedown. Here's my next question, Chief Green. I stay with you because I want to get to the tragic officer accidentally getting killed in D.C. Here's my question. One of the tough things you guys have told me and taught me and our audience over the years is the problem when you have bad apples and bad actors in law enforcement, you can't get rid of them. Both of you all are chiefs, and you both experienced this shit, right? You can't get rid of them because of these unions. And the union came out immediately and said Tyreek was uncooperative to justify and make it seem as though, you know, the victim is the villain, Chief Green.
And I said it again, L.A.
In terms of the union rep, the representatives came out right away.
Oh, yeah, right away.
And justified the actions. And you both, as chiefs, had experience trying to get rid of a male or female officer, whichever, but you couldn't, or it was tough to do because the unions block it all the time. And in most cases, in these cases, Chief Gray.
Well, and you know, LA, and it's something we've talked about. The unions are almost, people get the attitude that the unions are speaking on behalf of that department, and that's not the message that is coming from the chief or the director of that agency or the commissioner of that agency. And so they feel that they're obligated to protect the officers even when the officer is wrong. And so which puts administrators in a situation where everybody is we all want to make sure that people have due process. Even when you do something wrong, there is still that due process. But things are put in where we're put in the positions to where you know that this officer violated multiple policies, and this is not the type of person that you want to represent your agency and who you want to that represent the city. But there's going to be that union support that's going to say or is going to make things difficult for you to get rid of him or her when they have violated multiple policies. And is this situation one? I know the union came out very quickly and said that the officer didn't do anything wrong. They blamed Tyreek Hill for everything. And I just kind of go back to, man, how often have we seen this happen to somebody else of a different race, to where they come out immediately and the union didn't come out and say anything about what happened in with the golfer, because I believe, if I remember right, the officer who arrested him was black. So you got these unions who want to protect the officers, but they make it very difficult for administrators to do their jobs.
And Chief Humphrey, I don't know, I won't say a business, but an agency where the CEO or the manager or you as the chief can hire, right, in a lot of cases, but can't fire without getting approval. It just, I'm either in charge or I'm not in charge. Talk about the dynamics of that, because, you know, it's, as Chief Green said, you know, these unions, leaders come out and say these things, and that agency might be like, well, shoot, I want to get rid of them now. I want to get rid of both of them now. But that process seems to be very frustrating. But I don't know how you guys do it when you get a bad apple and you know they not only put a mark on your agency, but also in some cases you guys have told me on and off the air, showing a lack of respect for you as the chief.
Well, it's the system that we're in, LA, and you know, whether I agree with it or not, it's the system that we're in. You just have to do your job. And, you know, when it comes to the point of discipline, whatever level it is, you have to do what's right for that particular incident. If it leads up to termination, you do it. You do it. Whatever happens after that, you have no control over it. And that's what we have to realize. You do your job. When you take a chief's job, you realize what you can and what you can't do, what the processes are. You do it. Whether you agree with it or not, that's the process you have to follow. You know, and it comes down to there are those chiefs who are afraid to make those decisions because they worry about what's going to be said if they terminate somebody who deserves to be terminated or if they don't terminate somebody. So they worry about it, and instead of doing what's right, at the end of the day, these officers use excessive force. Now, how are you going to deal with it? What level of discipline are you going to assess? You assess the level of discipline that you believe is fair. You deal with it and you move on. You can't worry about, well, if I do this, nobody's going to like me. If I do this, they might get their job back. You've done your job. Whether you like the process or not, you've done the job that you were hired to do. You do it. You stick behind whatever decision you make. It's when we start waffling. Well, I can't do that because this chief did this, this officer 100 miles away did this, and they did this. You've got to sit down, and you've got to be a man or a woman about it, a leader. Make the decision what's best to move on. If the person gets their job back or if they get their job back, it has nothing to do with the decision you made. If they don't get their job back, it doesn't have anything to do with that's the process. And so once you realize that and stop worrying about what people think, then you're going to be more effective as a leader.
Yeah, and Chief, you can answer that, but also I wonder because immediately one of the officers was on administrative leave, I guess the desk duty, and of course they had talked about, they had showed the body cam. Is that an indication? I mean, pure speculation because you guys are different agencies and stuff, but when that happens fast, Chief Green, is that an indication that they're getting ready to fire these guys?
No, not necessarily. No, I think the director who is over in Miami-Dade now is a black female. She hasn't been in the position that long, but she has a very long career with Miami-Dade Police Department, and obviously she made the decision to put this officer on paid administrative leave based on what she has seen or what was presented to her. Again, it is
because,
I don't
because
think,
Virgil, hold on, and we don't know what this officer's history is also. So,
well,
you know,
I was going to bring that up because, again, I was going to, you know, bring that up, but also, LA, just to go back to what happened up in Minneapolis with Chauvin. Chauvin had a long history of misconduct, performance issues, disciplinary issues, and nothing had been done to him. And there was, at some point, the former chief tried to do something, but the union stepped in. It wouldn't allow that to happen. And so I was going to say that even when we as police chief try to do what is best for the agency, what's best for the city, that's turned around on the men and women who serve in the position that we serve in, because now you become the subject of being harassed, you become the subject of being not supported within your own agency or not being supported by people within the union, and you're just doing your job and you're following what the policy is saying is guiding you what to do. So, again, you find a lot of people are trying to do the right things, but once you do the right things, now you become more of a target than the officer who's involved in the situation.
Mm. Keith in Maryland said some men and women shouldn't be officers. I take it a step further. Some men and women shouldn't have guns. but I digress. A final question on this, because I hear people, I mentioned Stephen A. Shannon Sharp said the same thing, you know, comply, comply, comply. And I had someone in the chat room and said, well, you know, things can escalate on both ends. Let's say they said, this is in Washington, they said, let's say if you and I were arguing, human nature is that we get loud and boisterous and start getting angry and all emotional. I said, okay, I'm going to present this to the Chiefs. And my thing is, guys, if I got into an argument with somebody on the street and it escalated, that's one thing. You get into it with a cop, law enforcement, you're trained to de-escalate. It's a different thing. I don't think the onus is on the civilian in that case, in those situations, guys. Tell me if I'm wrong, that they have to be the bigger person, right? Like, they didn't sign up to de-escalate. They're not signing up to run to danger and run into fire. That's what law enforcement does. And part of law enforcement's job is to try to de-escalate the situation so everybody can go home to their families safe, Chief Humphrey.
Well, let me say this. You know, one of the things that's been drilled into law enforcement from day one of the academy, that we're held to a higher level, expected to be a bigger person. When has that changed? I mean, that's what we were trained in the academy. You know, theory says this. We are trained to be in a position to where we can address any situation that happens calmly, because we know when you're calm, you're able to respond accordingly, even if that's up to the level of deadly force. And I've said this before. I think it's a small percentage of the community that don't understand there is a possibility we might have to go to deadly force. There's more people who understand that there's more that don't understand. The problem is we can never be out of control. You can always do it. There was a way to do that. There was a different way to do that. I don't like the armchair quarterback, but I'm telling you right now, those officers could have been, they were required and responsible and expected to be more in control than it was. I'm not saying it was all of them, because there was really one or two that were involved in the verbal aspect of it. But I do think that those others had a responsibility to step in and say, hey, man, we got this, man. We got this. But nobody did that. And it wasn't until, you know, you get this man in cuffs and things. And even after he was in cuffs, you still have the one that's mouthing. Even after the
and
man
now
in
he's
cuffs,
not a threat.
He's, down there, he's not a threat. He's not a threat.
Let me, exactly. Let me mention this in the chat room. See, this is the idiocy that comes out of these conversations. And people, look, people trope your show, I'm sure, and they do mine. And this person said, and I'm kicking them out of the chat because only because they're ridiculous. Where did you get these two guys? Oh, they're only saying that because they're black. Let me tell you something, folks. Let me tell you something. These two guys, right? These two black chiefs keep it real, right? Number one. Number two, I've 5 decades of experience. These ain't no okie dokes that walked in. These ain't no just rookies coming out of somewhere. They done seen it all and done it all. So shut the hell up.
Well, you know what's funny? You know what's funny with that? Because Chief Green and I have sit here and specifically said the deal that happened in Memphis, those officers were, now you got a black officer and a black suspect, they were wrong. They were wrong to the point that they actually killed a man. Now they're wrong. I ain't defending that at all. So this black and white thing, we're talking about this particular incident. And I wouldn't care what race they were, whatever. If you're wrong, you're wrong. And this racial stuff that people bring up, man, y'all got to stop that. we got to stop this, because why is they only saying that because of this? We're only saying that because of that. Come on, man. Where's the humanity part of it?
Well, and I'm going to say this. You know, we have spoke out against when black officers have done something wrong, like what happened, Keith just mentioned in Memphis. We spoke out against black officers in Atlanta when a black officer kicked a black woman in the head who was handcuffed, and a black female standing there didn't do anything. We don't choose just to say we're black that we're talking about other white officers or other race of officers. If you are wrong, you are wrong. There it comes to – this is all about accountability, being professional. And when people who are not in law enforcement or even people who are in law enforcement put in, well, you know, oh, you're saying it because you're black. Come on, listen, man. Like you said, L.A., and Keith said, the one thing that we have been very consistent on for the past 4 years since we've been doing this is that we are going to be honest conversation that have to be had, but we don't pick sides just because we're black. The officers I spoke out very critical against the black officers in Memphis that here you are a black man and you're going to treat another black man the same way. But so we get on this deal about we bring up race when race has nothing to do with it. It comes down to police officers have there's an oath that you take to protect and serve. That doesn't mean that you have protect black people and you protect other people better than you do. You protect everybody the same way. So,
let me say this real quick. Would that person who called in, do they have the same feelings regarding the police officers on January the 6th, the white police officers on January 6th who were calling the black police officers that were protecting the Capitol, the N-word? So, I mean, if you want to play that, we can play it another way. But it had nothing to do. We don't do that. See, that's the thing that happens. If you're wrong, you're wrong. You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. It doesn't matter.
And Mark in New Hampshire said, well, because I mentioned Stephen A., that Stephen A. is only trying to save lives. Of course, that's a quote from Stephen A. said from his show. He only wants to save lives. So if you just comply. But the danger in that, and this does, for me, does involve race. The danger in that is you send a message to people, black and brown people, that if you just comply, you know, you'll live through whatever it is. And we know that's not to be true. So we cannot put that out there without a disclaimer saying it's good to comply, but understand we shouldn't, A, have to live in a society like that while you black, you got to tell your kids, okay, this is what you got to do because I want to see you get home. And B, that, you know, these are, like you said, real conversations that we have to have in order to, in every case, but this law enforcement thing is extremely more important than other cases where we have bad apples. So I digress. You were going to say, Chief Humphrey?
No, I was finished. It kills me when I hear people do that. You know, he's saying that because it has nothing to do with it. If you were paying a close attention to the person who sent that in, I think we started off by saying Tyreek could have handled that better. Tyreek
even admitted it. Yeah, even
he could have handled that better.
And the one thing, everything at the heat of the moment, things happen, and once you calm down, you do realize I could have handled that situation better. I haven't heard a whole lot of police officers who have ever admitted, yeah, you know what, I could have handled that better. That publicly, I could have handled that better. We get into if we're going to stick to it, and if it's wrong, we're going to stick to it. We don't know how to come out and say, you know what, you're right. I messed up. Now, what
I just read something out of Kansas City where that newspaper up there, very critical. They're even calling for the firing of the officer who did this here because they don't agree based on what they have seen and all of the footage that has happened. People are entitled to their opinions. But the one thing that we continue to see in policing is that the incidents that these officers are involved in, these things build up over time. And we go back to what happened with Michael Brown. We go back to what happened with Eric Garner. All these things will go back to what happened 30-something years ago with Rodney King. Every decade, and we talked about this, L.A., every decade when something gets to that boiling point, people react. But police officers don't look at that and say, you know what, maybe it's time that we change the way we are policing. Because it's very simple. This profession can change the way we are policing. We saw in Dallas where a man did not have any regards for another black man, and he executed him in a car. There are people out there who don't care for cops for whatever reason. But there is a lot of people out there who do respect cops, and there's a lot of black people out there who do want cops in their communities who do respect cops. But at the end of the day, when you see another man disrespecting another man, how can you have respect for that man? I don't care who he is. It's about respect.
Yeah, and it's a training thing, too. I can't expect someone to come into a studio and know how to work machinery and all this kind of stuff. They've never done it. I've been trained on it. So you're at a disadvantage, and that's the situation. So this notion that, you know, again, we all agree that Tyreek could have did some stuff different, but having said that, we all agree that in this notion that he is supposed to de-escalate and be the bigger person, he is the civilian. The officers have the training. That's what you're trained for. If you get in a tight situation, an outraged person, they're mad, they've gone off, you're going to shoot them or cuff them or throw them down, or you're going to try to calm them down. Calm the situation. It's a damn speeding ticket. It shouldn't even got that far. Go ahead.
Well, you're right, L.A., and I didn't mean to cut. The one thing I want to go, this happened up in the Prince George County. A black officer, they're chasing this suspect. They get him handcuffed. An officer who, they've already got him handcuffed, they're walking him back to the car. Yeah, he made him run. An officer, a sergeant, I believe he may have been a sergeant, walks up to him and starts choking him. That officer reports what that officer did. This happened before the current police chief came into office. That officer was basically felt like, I mean, I'm still working with the people that I'm complaining on, but when we talk about duty to intervene and we're talking about stepping in and making sure officers de-escalate situations, we got to make sure that people, when they do, they're supported by the command staff and that these officers around them, because we're in a profession that, and I've said this, and I don't think I'll change by saying it, it is a very segregated profession.
Right. And he was a sergeant, which makes it bad.
Yeah, and again, you have people. This is a profession where a lot of people are not walking, running to the door to get in this profession like they were in the 70s and 80s and 90s. People are leaving this profession. But you got some who are leaving it because they're saying, oh, well, they tried to defund us and all this other kind of stuff. I go back to the profession is as good as you make it. And if you make this profession the best you can make it and you can make a change, that is what you need to stand up for. But when you see somebody doing something wrong, no matter what color they are,
because the officers in Memphis, they all were black, but not a single one of them turned each other in. If it wasn't for that cam pole, up there that just so happened to be in that neighborhood, we wouldn't be talking about Tyreek Nichols, because nobody would have known what happened to him, because they would have covered it up. Mm. And those were black officers.
Real quick, because I know you guys got a problems pretty soon. Staying in not too far from Prince George County, in D.C., the tragic accidental shooting of Metropolitan Police Department Officer Wayne David. I believe he was in sort of a violent crime division.
Right.
And they were obviously chasing a suspect. The suspect got rid of the gun. The officer went to retrieve it, wound up shooting himself, and the medical examiner said a gunshot wound to the head is what he died from. I wanted to talk about this, guys, because, Chief Humphrey, start with you, and the same question to you, Chief Green, thereafter. Is it more dangerous if in one of those units? What is the protocol in retrieving it? Did he break any protocol in terms of go for the perp first and then go try to retrieve the weapon later? Tell our audience, Chief Humphrey and then Chief Green, about that, your experience.
Well, I think the suspect had gotten was in custody. They were able to capture the suspect shortly after he discarded the weapon. And what it just seems like, there was an accidental discharge. You know, I don't know how he was handling it. I don't know his training, but it just seems that this was a weapon that was that accidentally discharged or whatever, and it ended tragically. So. Don't know what their protocols are, but I think that from what I gather, I mean, he was chasing the suspect. The gun was discarded. They arrested him, and he went back to retrieve it, which was evidence at that time. And at some point, it discharged. And you just never know. Every gun is different. You know, I hear people say that, well, you know, they make semi-automatic weapons now that they want. Well, we don't know what type of weapon it was, what type of semi-automatic weapon. We don't know. We don't know how they took care of that weapon. We don't know what condition it was in. We just don't know. All we know is that we have a police officer who was killed in an accidental discharge, which is very tragic. And it's just, you know, my heart goes out to his family and to the other officer. So don't know. Don't know what happened.
Yeah. I think if I'm not mistaken, either the suspect or other suspects, I have to go back to the story, turned themselves in, Chief Green.
You're already elated.
Have you experienced that, and does that happen a lot in those violent crime gang unit type situations?
You know, I wouldn't say it. That's very rare. For something like what happened in D.C., it's very rare and unfortunate that a person fleeing from police officers, and they do have a weapon, but they hide the weapon in some kind of way, that weapon is discharged when the officer retrieved it. Very rare. And you're right. So the person involved in this, a week later, they turned themselves in to the authorities in D.C. Again, I think it was just an accident that, you know, he's taking the weapon out of the storm drain. Obviously, his hand got, you know, some kind of way, got on the trigger, and that weapon ended up, ended up taking his life.
Guys, I keep getting though in the chat room, and I really want to know from you guys, is that because, I mean, TV, but it's real. Like if you watch On Patrol or something like that, I've seen a lot of cases, and in the chat room they're saying they've seen cops chasing people, if the perp throws a gun out the window or whatever, they go chase the perp, them first, then get the weapon. It seems like in this case, it was the opposite. Is that the norm? Is there any protocol with that? When you're chasing and you know they're armed and dangerous and then they get rid of it, is there any kind of, is it an agent in the agency, a cop, a subjective type thing? How does that work?
Well, I think, I don't know what their policy says, and everybody's policy is different, and you have those individuals who, you have those officers that will be chasing someone who has a weapon. They'll discard it. They feel as though the weapon that they discarded is more important than continually chasing that person. So I don't know. I don't think there's any rule of thumb that says that you have to do this or have to do that. That officer has to justify their action. And, you know, from what I'm reading, it appears that he didn't want that gun laying around out there, a discarded gun laying around. That's where I take it. And he was doing what he felt he needed to do to make sure that no one, innocent person, was injured by that weapon, you know, or that somebody came and got it later. And I believe, from what I've read and things like that, is that's what he was doing, trying to make it a safe area, trying to make that weapon safe so nobody would get hurt or be able to come back later and get the weapon and use it. And unfortunately, you know, he lost his life trying to make that area better and safer.
Yeah, so Chief Green, sounds like a common sense approach or a subjective approach, Chief Humphrey is saying, you know, you just make that decision, that split decision, you go after the suspect or you retrieve the weapon first.
So I think in this situation, if I recall, when I, you know, looked into what was released, what happened was the subject ran from him. At some point, they believed the weapon that he had thrown it in this drainage area. Now, there were also other people looking for the weapon, but it so happened this officer found the weapon. So, you know, they could have canvassed that area and probably wouldn't have found the weapon, but this officer found the weapon. And once he retrieved it out of the storm, out of that drainage, then his hand hit the trigger and the weapon discharged. So, once again, I just think, you know, do you run and get the suspect and try to detain him? Well, obviously they lost him and they couldn't find him, but they did canvass the area to locate the weapon, because you do want to get, let's just say, you know, some kid would have found that weapon and the same thing could have happened to them. I mean, it's unfortunate that the officer lost his life, and this just the dangers that comes with this profession, that you never know what you're going to be dealing with. And unfortunately, you know, we don't want to see an officer lose their life, but it happened. But I think he also prevented other tragedy from happening.
And that's the way I think we have to look at it, is that this officer lost his life, saving, you know, hopefully preventing someone else, you know, preventing someone else from losing their life, because someone else could have found that weapon.
Yeah.
And we don't know if there was a weapon malfunction. We don't know. We just don't know. But at the end of the day, we do know that an officer lost his life, and I believe that Officer David lost his life trying to keep that community safe. Matter of fact, I mean, that's what I believe.
Yeah, I do as well.
Let me just say this and give you guys flowers now. And you specifically and your profession and the good apples in your profession, because, he died in the line of duty. He did. I mean, because he was doing what he's supposed to do as a law enforcement person, right? And so he died trying to help the community. And let's keep it real. Keeping the community safe also means another suspect or perp could have picked that gun up and used it and robbed somebody and shot somebody or whatever. So to you guys' point of what he was trying to do, he made that decision, I want to get this weapon off the street. I can always find this guy. They probably knew him, right? So they could, like, Chief Humphrey said, could always get a warrant and come back and get him or whatever the case may be. But let me just say this. It didn't get a lot of national media attention. It got some. But shame on the national media, surprise, surprise, that they don't talk about tragedies of officers going to danger too much. And you know, for radio purposes, we talk about Tyreek Hill from a standpoint of another black man being treated, blah, 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 blah. But that got more news than the good officers that are doing so many good things all over the country. So to the good officers and the good chiefs and the good apples in your agency, I say I applaud them for what you do, because it's so many times, unfortunately, I bring you on and it's something going on with a bad apple. And let's talk about the good apples sometimes. Even in tragedy, let's talk about the good apples that are doing the work that people, like you said, Chief Green, want in their communities. Black people are very conservative by nature. We go to church. We want law enforcement, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so that notion that we don't and all black people hate cops and everything, that's not entirely true. Now,
bad apples
do make it bad for you, but the good apples get buried because of bad apples and bad situations like the Tyreek situation and others. And black cops in Memphis. But I just want to say that to you guys. You know how I feel about you guys personally and otherwise, that you guys should be applauded. And quite frankly, I don't want to do it. I can't. You do it, so I don't have to do it. And I appreciate it.
You got to have some tough skin. You got to have some tough skin and don't take things personal. And you know, I think, you know, Keith will probably echo this. We don't take anything personal. Even when somebody personally attacks us or says something, I don't take it personal. But the one thing I do want to go back and say is that, LA, you just mentioned that not a lot was said nationally about the D.C. officer being killed. You may have saw something here and there, just like with the Dallas police officer who was executed. It was covered in that area very heavily, but on a national level, it wasn't really covered. It was covered some, but at the end of the day, here's a man who was a school teacher for over 20-something years, embedded in the community in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, who decided to give up that career to become a police officer to continue to serve his community. He hadn't even... Keith, correct me if I'm wrong, he hadn't even completed almost a year probation being with the Dallas Police Department. And his life was taken because we will never know why he took his life. Those are the type of stories that we need to continue to talk about and remind people that your life can be taken in a matter of seconds, and you're sitting in your police car, or you could be driving down the road, going to a call and get hit by a drunk driver, or you know that you're trying to prevent a drunk driver from killing other people, and you put your car and your body in a position to where you're going to stop that drunk driver. And that has happened, and officers have lost their lives, they have been seriously injured, but they make those same decisions that the men and women who go into the military to protect and serve this country, that we got men and women who are protecting and serving their communities, and they know they are their parent, their husband, their father, but they put themselves
in harm's way to protect others. And I think that's what the D.C. officer was doing when they were canvassing, looking for that weapon. They could have easily said, hey, man, I can't find it, and move on. But he was determined, or others were determined, to find that weapon, and they did. But unfortunately, we're talking about a tragic situation.
Yeah, Matt in Denver said men and women know what they're getting into when they get into law enforcement. Steve in Chapel Hill said probably the good apples are being buried because of the messengers who are speaking, he said, i.e. Trump, to fund the police or supporting the police. I guess the messenger messes it up for the bad apples. If a guy like Trump, I guess he's saying, it's a messenger. Finally, personal question, a question directly to Chief Humphrey. They asked, is it different in terms of how you deal with officers hired fire, being chief of a university as opposed to being chief of a city or town?
I mean, it's all the same as far as the, discipline is discipline. There might be a little bit more, few more steps, but discipline is discipline. The officers at a university are expected to follow the rules and guidelines just like anyone else. So, no one gets a walk. And I will tell you that, you're dealing with people's children. And so people aren't going to tolerate you mistreating their children. And so I believe as a school police officer, especially school police chief, you have a higher level of expectation of being more professional and being more proactive. Doesn't mean you're not doing law enforcement, but you have better opportunities to be proactive on a more regular basis than you do in the city, because that's a whole different, you're dealing with a different concept and environment.
He wrote back, he said, boy, Chief Humphrey got his hands full with all these protests on the campuses around the country. So go ahead.
the other thing is, and on a university, you have more opportunities to be proactive, because the last thing you want to do is you want to arrest a student. And so there's opportunities,
right.
There's wraparound services for students. And so you have to utilize all those opportunities and things like that. So you have to have the right person who's a police officer, I think, on a university. But at the end of the day, whether it's local, municipality, university, a person has to have a right heart to do the job.
Yeah. Well, I'll add this, Keith. I think the one thing, universities are totally separate from municipal government. They operate totally different. I mean, it's different because you're dealing with a private institution, an educational institution, who have their own guidelines. Municipal agencies, government, you've got to deal with, unions, you got to deal with other things that a university may not have to deal with. So they may have more flexibility that gives that police chief more authority to discipline people or remove people when there's a need to do so, because you may not have to go through some of the steps. And Keith, you can speak on that if that's accurate or if I'm off base, but I think universities, they're a private institution. They don't have similar guidelines that municipal agencies have to deal with.
Mm. So they fall under state employees or private employees, but it's a different method of process. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on a good and light note, Barbara and Mount Vernon said, saw them on You on the Law, good looking men. So after you guys retire, you might have another career in modeling. So I'm just putting it out there.
Hey,
Tell Barbara thank you, and tell Barbara to go to You and the Law and like You and the Law Facebook.
Oh, she actually went to your Facebook page and saw and said, handsome man, she said, with an exclamation point.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Hey, L.A., I know and she's talking about me. L.A., I don't think she's talking about my co-host.
Whatever. Thank you, Barbara. Barbara, I'm humble enough to accept that and appreciate it. I'm not narcissistic like the gentleman that works up in Minneapolis.
Oh, come on, bro. You know, come on, man. You wrong for that, man.
Hey, Hump, you knew he was going to say something like that. You knew it was coming. You knew he was going to say
L.A., we were with you for, 2 years? And, you know, I got to get it in when I can get it in because that brother right there, man.
But people don't know off air you get it in, and Chief says some stuff that he can't really say coming back at you on the air. But I've been in those phone calls before, so. With that being said, please do promote you guys' show, times, how they can reach you, even email address if you want to put that out there. Great show and great job tonight, too. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you. So people can find us, L.A., on our Facebook page, You and the Law Podcast. We actually now have a website, which is www.youandthelawpodcast.com. That's www.youandthelawpodcast.com. It will have all of our social media links. You can go and you find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can search and find You and the Law. Those links are on our website, and you also find a little bio about both of us. And again, the one thing I want to say, and I'll let Keith follow up, Ella, we wouldn't be where we are without you. I got to go back and give you that for giving us this opportunity to come unto you, for us to learn and grow as the profession that we're in. And we're both passionate about talking about policing issues in America and how our voices can help somewhat change the way policing is and have this conversation. So, again, thank you. But for those who want to find out more about us, go to our website. You can find us on YouTube. So, again, and we just thank everybody. And our show airs live every Thursday, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. We stream live on Facebook. We stream live on YouTube. And we also stream live on LinkedIn for those who are on LinkedIn. So I'll pass it over to my co-host.
No, there's nothing more I need to say, man. We just keep it real. We have a good time. You know, people sometimes don't agree with what we say, but one thing they can't say is that we're not being honest. We're neutral, but we're honest. And, you know, we realize that law enforcement, we have a big responsibility. We have a lot of rights that some people don't have. I mean, it's a privilege to be a law enforcement officer, but there are rights that come along with that privilege as a law enforcement officer, and we don't want to see people abuse them, and we don't want to see people abused by those laws.
Yeah. And I'll say this, L.A.,
yeah.
me and Keith, we don't always agree on everything, and I think that's the beauty of what we of the relationship that we have, both professional and personal, and we don't always agree, but we respect each other and what the product that we're trying to, because we know we have a voice that's out there around the country and even outside of the country who people listen to, who listen to our podcast. So we take what we say very serious, and oftentimes it's controversial, and he may not agree with what I have to say, but I respect it, and I may not agree with what he has to say, but I respect it, and that's what makes this podcast show something that you're going to be engaged with and something that you're going to get some very good information out of, because if you want to know the truth, you're going to find out the truth on You and the Law podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't deserve any of the credit because, you know, you when you have a diamond in the rough and you have the content and the platform that you guys have, it had nothing to do with me. To God be the glory. And the biggest thing is the fact is that just about everybody in this country at some point, not all, but most people are going to encounter law enforcement at somehow, some way, in some situation. And all of these scenarios you guys bring up is real talk. It's real life stuff. And you accentuate the positives when they need to be, and that's my job, and then you call out what is wrong. And anybody has a problem with that, and they go, oh, that's just two black guys, you know, you black, they black, all that stupid shit that has nothing to do with You and the Law. And I just so much appreciate you guys. I just, it's a learning lesson for me that when I ask about, you know, is it protocol on, you know, should you pick up the weapon first, or is the protocol that you could step in the lead officer and say, hey, man, you need to calm it down. I mean, I don't know these things. So when I ask these things, I'm learning like the audience. And it's so fascinating to hear what you guys have to say. And it's real. And that's why I appreciate you, brothers. I appreciate you coming on this show. And as I always say, you keep your head up and be proud as you're black men in blue uniforms, but you keep your head down so, you know, from danger. And I love you guys, and I appreciate the extended time you had on today.
All right,
well, I appreciate you too. And I just want to say to the audience before you go, I'm the sexier one out of the two. That's all I'm gonna say. Y'all have a good evening. Take care.
Oh, he got you. He got you the last minute. Berger, he got you the last minute, man.
Oh yeah, he always does, man. He always does.
Thank you, brothers. Appreciate you.
All right. Appreciate it.
Appreciate
you,
bro.
All right. All right,
bro. All right, now. Chief Humphrey, Chief Virgil Green, both chiefs in Chief Virgil Green, a chief in Minnesota, Chief Keith Humphrey, a chief of police at the University of Memphis. And, of course, as he said, he's been with local municipalities. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Pat Freeman. Thanks to Chief of the Green. And thanks to you. We certainly appreciate it for joining us on the Bachelor News show, on the Bachelor News Radio Network.